If you suddenly discover that you have an extremely rare and aggressive form of cancer, how would you choose to spend your remaining time in this life? Would you spend time with your family? Seek out all possible treatment options? Perhaps start a nonprofit to support others in chronic illness? Seek connectivity in all walks of life? Or maybe you choose all of the above. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. WonderCast is brought to you by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. Today we meet Chris Brown, founder of Aya of Infinity Nonprofit, proud husband and father, and oh yeah, truly living with his very late stage cancer. Tune in for a glimpse to his personal journey of building up his community and making a difference wherever he can for however long he has left. This is Chris.
My full name is Christopher Othello Brown. My mother was a English professor at a college, so she kind of liked Shakespeare, I would assume, and she named me Othello. Go figure. When I get older, I was curious about my name and what my name meant. And come to find out, that gentleman took his wife's life, his queen's life, and then took his own. I was like, Ma, how could you give me a name like that?
What did she say?
She said, well, I mean, we have to go with the flow of who I love. I love Shakespeare. I was like, okay, well, that's how I ended up with a name like Othello. I live here in Missouri City, Texas. Where we live is kind of a rural area. It's a city around us, but we're in a corner where there isn't a lot of traffic. There's no shopping center. There's no little stores right here where we are. I have 5 kids. I have a daughter that me and my first wife, we adopted her. She and I then in turn had 2 boys of our own. When I met Danielle, my wife, she had 2 girls. I've been dad to them ever since they know of a dad. I've been dad to so many other children because I coached youth baseball here in Missouri City, Little League, and some other leagues and things like that. Nurturing children as a coach, if you love producing something, you have to create something. So I always wanted to produce a child that would be respectful. They understand sometimes I can't win them all, you know, type things in life that goes along with you in life. You know, sports kind of build a core value with you, even when you start coaching kids when they're really, really young. About hard work pays off, you know, and practice really does make perfect, you know, a few times perfect. Still coach, yeah, no matter what. I was first diagnosed in September of 2019. I have to rewind to say a little bit first. I was a really hardworking guy, right? And everybody on the job knew that he outworks everybody every day. He's here early. He's here doing all of the overtime. And on a Thursday, I came home. I wasn't feeling well. And I told Danielle, I just don't feel the best right now. And she said, what you mean? I said, this feels like it's a little hard to breathe. You know, my chest area feel full. You know, it's fuller than normal because I worked at the city at the time. On this Thursday, I wasn't feeling well. So my supervisor had already told me not to come in on Friday. I didn't know why. She told me I needed to go to a doctor. I refused to go to the doctor on that Friday because I just didn't want to go. My coworkers had told Danielle that he's not the same on the job anymore. Friday goes by, the weekend go through. I never got really myself. So on that Monday, I told her I can't not go to work. I got to show my face. So she's okay, get dressed. So I started getting dressed and got myself prepared for work, had packed me a lunch, you know what I mean? And got in the car. She said, I'm taking you today. So I get in the car And when we pass up the job, I'm looking at the job and we're riding down the road and I'm looking at it coming and it's still going. I said, well, where are you going? Take me back over there. And she said, I need to take you somewhere first. I say, where? She said, I'm taking you to the hospital. So we went to the hospital, and within 3 hours of being there at Pearland Medical, you know, it's a small hospital, but they diagnosed me immediately with stage 4 cancer. Like, they knew that this is bad. The name of my cancer is called pseudomyoma of the peritus. My appendix ruptured some time back and I didn't know it. So when they diagnosed me, I was like, I can't understand how my appendix ruptured. What did I do? All I do is go to work and drink a little beer. So the doctor said, that doesn't have anything to do with it, I don't think. He said, cancer is something that just develops, and everybody's anatomy and what the foods they eat and things like that makes a difference. So he told us he would like to send us to Herman Memorial off of 45, I want to say, and to another doctor that was a specialist in oncology. Stayed in Pearland Medical like 2 weeks. But as soon as I got out, he had already scheduled an appointment for me to go the following day to this other doctor and get a second opinion, that he was sharing my medical information with him and they wanted to see me. I just know it's not easy, you know, going through the diagnosis, but I was blown away. You hear somebody has cancer, most people make a statement, oh, I'm sorry. They have nothing to be sorry for because they didn't give you cancer, you know. So I always tell people, don't tell me you're sorry I got cancer. Just tell me you have concerns and you have prayers that I'll do better. Don't say I'm sorry, because I think that's how we've created that stigma with the word cancer. That is something you have to be sorry about. And that's unfair to that patient. Because life is still going to keep going on. Every day is still going to go. The clock is not going to stop rotating. I didn't understand cancer. You know, I used to say, oh, I'm sorry too. I've done it. But being, you know, terminally ill, ooh, you know, when they described all of that, I was like, what do you mean? Terminal cancer. I'm like, I know what terminal is. You know, I've heard about it, but you mean that I'm going to die from it? Now, I'm kind of stubborn, so I don't want it to be that. When I go to doctor's visits, Julie, I light up every person in the room. I spark them and create conversation for all of us to indulge in, because we're all human. We have a common ground. We're all sitting in here with cancer, or a family member of a person that has cancer, or a caregiver, you know, people that go to the visits with you and stuff like that when you're doing your chemo. We can talk about this. Let's do something about this word.
Did they have any idea of how long you might have had this?
They said I had it about 6 years prior to finding out. Appendix had completely ruptured, and the fluids out of the appendix eventually eroded the stomach lining. And that's how it affected practically every organ in my body. They trimmed pieces off of every organ in my body for more than one reason. They trimmed it because they were getting the cancer off, of course, but they also were trimming it so later on I'll have space. The simplest way to look at it is that I'll die from suffocation, that I'm going to keep expanding and expanding, and eventually it's going to push onto my lungs where I can't breathe, right? I've always tried to do things to keep my lungs up. I try to move around. I try to work. I ride my bicycle, constantly walking throughout the day. You know, I sit outside and soak up the sun, and it's all to try to fight back. It's an extremely rapidly growing cancer, and it takes no prisoners. You know, if it's got you, it's got you. You're not going to shake it. So it's just best way to live with it, you know, and I choose to live with it and look at that cancer. A lot of times you'll hear me speak of cancer or him in like a third party or a fourth party individual, right? Because he's my enemy. He's my enemy. He's her enemy. He's her enemy. He's all of our enemies right now. And we can't just let just him alone ruin all of us. That's how I take cancer. So I tell people all the time, cancer ass running from me.
Yep.
Me running from me, because if I catch him, I'm going to do something with him. I'm going to get rid of him. You know what I mean? And I say that because I look at it from, once I find the healing tool that works, if I can figure out how to reverse those and keep my immune system stronger and keeping my lungs strong, I have to use this breathing tool 3 times a week. It's been highly recommended that I do it for 30 minutes. You know, while I'm watching TV or whatever, the doctors told me if my lungs start failing, it's because they're weak. My strength to survive is to breathe. If you can't breathe, you're up crap creek. After I left this doctor in off of 45 at Herman Memorial, his words to me was, you're in a really, really bad situation. Because of your insurance is not going to cover this at all. It caused Danielle to start digging into different insurances immediately while we're in his office, right? So she's trying to look up my insurance and see where there might be a wormhole some kind of way where I could get into MD Anderson, because it was like, I want to go to MD Anderson then if this is what's going on. So he told me, he said, and that's probably the best place for you. They immediately told me I couldn't go back to work. You know, I couldn't do nothing. Don't pick up nothing anymore and all of this. It's just like, it's like my life got raped away from me, you know, because I don't like being dormant. You know, I try to stay real active and I try to make people smile. I know the most important thing is love. In my past, I didn't know how to love people or things or life the way I should have. And for right now, I finally experienced what real love is as far as a companion or what he's created us. I do so much outside that every morning in the family, they be like, man, you need to go inside. It's hot. You still outside. I push myself in different environments and do the things I do because I'm not weak-minded to cancer. And since I know he's trying to weaken me through my emotions, you know what I'm saying? I have to catch him real quick, you know, because he can really bother you. Danielle makes jokes and be like, yeah, he's crazy, you know? And be like, Chris, you crazy, you know what I mean? And she'll be like, yeah, he's crazy. He's crazy enough not to feel pain. He's crazy enough not to stop when he probably should, because I'm showing the strength that needs to be shown for the family amongst all the difficulties and things that has happened with cancer and obstacles that we faced with insurance and just health, learning how to eat again, learning how to live again, learning how to have a bowel movement again. It's like, man, this is a lot. It is a full-time job to survive.
How do you feel like your kids have come to understand your illness? Do you feel like they just, this is the norm, dad just has this illness and we're just living life? Or do they feel like they worry about it?
They love the fact that I'm strong and that I make things happen. They always say, tell daddy to do it, it'll get done. You know, like, he's still the one to depend on for anything to get done. And a lot of times when we're at places, when I speak, they'll see people make donations and stuff like that.
I love that your family sees you living life, even with your diagnosis and the hard prognosis that you've been given. They see your resiliency. And I think that is a huge example of strength for your kids.
And that's what Aya Infinity's biggest thing is, resilience. Yeah, resilience to overcome and use the resources that you have to overcome.
Talk to me about Aya of Infinity a little bit, about how it came to be.
We were noticing everybody was having the anxieties. We started seeing the anxieties and things that was in me because I told her I want to go see a doctor, you know, a psychiatrist or someone to talk to about my anxiety because I can't keep still. It's like my mind just steady thinking about cancer. And I went to two or three different places, and I just couldn't, I couldn't get what I was looking for as far as me seeing a doctor. I told my children when I went in the hospital that if I survive, I'm going to do something better for other people that may suffer from what I suffer from, since it's such an extremely horrible disease that I have. And I knew that it would be a challenge because there's not many being diagnosed. Danielle always saw that. I love to inspire people. I'm always like, I'm big on, hey, man, give me a hug. You know, just a guy in the corner store at the gas station or something. And be like, man, give me a hug, man. You look like you need a hug. And she used to take it like it was a joke. You know what I mean? Like, you are just too silly. But deep down, I was doing it because I know that sometimes people just need a hug. Somebody just need to, something you need to hear. I love you. We love you, you know, and that'll help boost you in a way, and especially for a stranger to just grab you and say, hey, man, can I get a hug? You know what I mean? And to get people to do it, it was like, she said, you have a real good connection with people. And I said, I always have.
It's a gift. That's a big gift.
And the time frame for me to say it's going to be a nonprofit, I didn't even know it was going to happen. I just started writing. I just said, I'm going to start a nonprofit. And I just started writing and doodling and writing. And family saw me just, he's completely distant. He's sitting right here. We're talking. He's not listening. He's on that tablet. He's constantly doing something. And he's not paying attention to us. That caused a little bit of its own little things around here. But I told him I'm busy. I'm doing something that I've been given to do. You know what I mean? This is an assignment. And my assignment is to change the way we live as a terminally ill cancer patient in this society, that we no longer have to live locked up in the house with a wrap over our head, afraid that we don't want nobody to see that our hair is falling out.
So with starting your nonprofit, and its focus is on mental health support for individuals who have cancers or terminal cancer.
We're focusing on terminal cancer and all cancers as a whole. Of course, we're focusing on terminally ill cancer patients, but we also want to have the opportunity to see those who need that psychological assistance regardless, because a diagnosis can really affect you in a lot of ways and you don't know it, but it's best to talk to someone. And we have a pretty good platform of group sessions. The way we do our group sessions, it's really creative. You know, I just want people to better themselves overall, Julie, because mental health has affected my household, yours, theirs, and theirs. And we didn't even know it was affecting us.
If people come to your website, ayaofinfinity.com, what will they find there?
We're big on resources. And with our partnering businesses, that nonprofits that we partner with, we have referrals where we can refer someone over to a certain place if they're having certain things going on. We have a place to refer them to as far as psychiatry, as far as counseling. We try to do most of the group sessions ourselves. We also help with insurance issues. Since Danielle is an insurance broker, she can break down what you have, what your real coverage is, how much of this is going to be covered along the way, and what else you may have to add as far as certain insurances.
Now, you do have a big event coming up. Do you want to share about that?
Yes, we are having a 2K, 5K walk/run for mental health awareness in America. And we're going to correlate a little bit of the aspect of cancer involved with a short speech once we finish the race and everything. We're going to do a small little presentation and speak with everybody about cancer and like a Q&A, a quick Q&A. And when they get to the registration table to register, there's going to be a QR code there. And The QR code is going to come from the Mental Health Association of America in office of Fort Bend. They'll scan this QR code and it'll answer like 5 or 6 questions. And then you can take off on your walk. But when you do this little QR code thing, it's going to ask you some questions that's going to identify if you may have depression. You may be dealing with anxiety. It's a small little questionnaire and you get to answer it and you get to find out on your own. Now, once you do, when you get, do your own homework and find out something about yourself, it's really up to you. But we're looking for everybody to come back once they finish looking at their numbers and say, hey, I want to talk to you all. I have someone in my family that's dealing with cancer. Because it's on every corner. We moved here with my dad here 3 years ago because Danielle was having trouble with me getting me up and out of the tub because I used to lay in the tub for hours upon hours, right? We was in an apartment, one bathroom. The girls come to the bathroom. I just throw the curtain back and Danielle's sitting there, you know, and just it was just like they've experienced so much along the way with this, you know, and then we moved here and it was like, it was just so much to do here, you know, because my dad's wife had passed and his eyesight isn't the best. So it's like, it's a lot to do around here. And it's like, we always want to do something, but he don't want anything to change because he knows where everything is, you know. I think overall, we're all dealing with our own challenges of mental health. Don't know how to express it to the next person. And I think getting into a group setting and a setting outside of the house box, you know, because this is a, when you're at home going through cancer, you're in a box. Get outside the box. You know, as they say, think outside the box. There's no way that you can think outside of the box if you're just going to continue to stay in the box with cancer. So I'm outside of that box. That's how I look at me and how I function. I function outside of that box of cancer because, yeah, I have terminal cancer. But I'd be dang it if I let terminal cancer damage my decisions on, you know what, I'm going to go do this event on this day. If I wake up feeling horrible, I'm still getting up and I'm going to go. I might move a little later. But I'm going to get there. You know what I mean? If I'm hosting an event, I'm going to get there. You know, that's because I got that resilience, to be honest with you.
Well, and I love that this event will bring all people from all walks of life together.
It's going to be in Missouri City, Texas at Hunters Glen Park off of Independence. The date on that is May 18th.
We'll link it on our website so that way people can still, it's not too late for people to register. Will you have on-site registration?
Yes. Yes, there will be on-site registration.
That's yes. Exciting.
Yeah, we're going to do a walk-around help for our participants. It's going to be a $5 donation to participate. And of course, there's vendor slots available. And the vendor slots are only $45. We're only asking for a $45 donation from our vendors because our focus right now is Eye of Infinity needs to grow and needs to bring more awareness to mental health for our reasons, just like Wonders and Worries reasons for what they do with cancer and how they help the youth. I admire you guys for doing what you do. And to be honest with you, you all were a very, very big inspiration for me to start the foundation.
Oh, that's really nice. That's very kind.
Because I saw something in Danielle first time I met her. I said, she is truly sincere about this.
She's very special. Yes.
Very sincere, right? So I immediately said, I want to do something like that for the older people, the adults, you know, the people that don't want to, you know, the ones that say, I don't need to talk to nobody. You know, and technically they do.
They do for sure. I love that you have such a supportive family.
Mm-hmm.
That's
they
really
never around. They say you stay gone. One time, Danielle was sick, and I was in there. I was making her a toddy for her cold, and they all were sick. And they was like, "I want a toddy." I was like, "No, that has alcohol in it. I'm not giving you that, right?" And they just saying, "Well, if it's gonna make mommy feel better, I want to feel better, but you're just gonna make her feel better, and not us, right?" So I told them no, but anyway, I fixed them a toddy, and I told them I'm always here for mommy. And they say, "Yeah, go and go get whatever you need to get for." And, you know, I got friends around in the area. You know, I kind of grew up in this area. So it's like every time I move, I bump into somebody that I know or,
you never know, met a stranger. And if you don't know them yet, you're about to know them.
I'm about to know them. I'm just that kind of guy. I open up and conversate with anyone.
I love it. What advice do you have for somebody who maybe is just received information about a new terminal illness that they have or someone they care about has?
Yeah, the advice I would give them is to first stop, take a breath, and breathe. That's number one. Two, I would say be willing to learn about your cancer immediately so you can understand the side effects that your body may be experiencing because of this cancer along the way. And get to know yourself more than anything. That's the advice I would give someone. Get to know yourself more, because the mental side of that diagnosis is always there. I don't care who you are. You say, "Man, that doesn't bother me. Oh, that don't bother me." That's not true. You know, it's not true. It does bother you. Like me, it bothers me. They don't want me picking up 15 pounds. I just do it a different way. I just use a wheel system, you know.
I get creative,
you know, and you're going to learn how to know which time is the best time frame to take your medications. And man, it's just so much. It's so much, Julie. It's like you can say this, but you can say that. You can say that. You can say that about it. And you wouldn't be telling a lie. You would be still giving the real truths about it.
It is so much. And you're right. When it's your forever and your every day, it gets heavy, I imagine. So
that's a part of what you need to say to someone right now dealing with cancer. You know, I want to beat cancer. I want to be strong. Get creative.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.